In the wake of September 11th, the role of the Central Intelligence Agency evolved. Once dedicated to collecting information around the world, the CIA began tracking down suspected terrorists and extracting information from them.
In the process, the CIA began to use what are called enhanced interrogation techniques, including waterboarding. From the moment the public knew about these techniques, their legality was debated at home and around the world.
When the CIA turned to these methods, it had to assess the legality of the techniques. The man they turned to was John Rizzo, who spent 34 years as a lawyer in the CIA, 7 years as chief legal advisor there. John has recently published a book about his time at the CIA called Company Man, 30 Years of Controversy and Crisis in the CIA. John, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for inviting me, Rob.
Well, tracking down terrorists in the wake of September 11th, there are a lot of agencies that have been involved in that, the armed forces. What's the particular role that the CIA has played?
Well, the CIA, among other responsibilities, is the instrument of the White House, of the president, to conduct covert action programs. And that includes both tracking and, in the case of the post-9/11 era, capturing, detaining, and interrogating in secret high-level members of Al-Qaeda. So that was the role the CIA was given and the one we undertook.
Well, as a legal advisor at the CIA, what does a CIA legal advisor do? What role do you play in those operations?
Yeah, I realize one of the reasons I wrote this book, Rob, is that people, I suppose, generally don't associate CIA with lawyers. But the fact of the matter is that CIA was and is heavily invested in lawyers, has many lawyers that are woven to the fabric of the agency. And particularly so in the 9/11 era, and since during that time I had risen to the role of a chief legal advisor, I was the point man, so to speak, for all of the legal questions arising out of the war of terror, war on terror post 9/11, and the methods by which CIA were to combat it.
And that's kind of how you got the gig in the CIA in the first place. You were watching the Church Committee hearings on the role of American intelligence, new rules being implemented, and you basically said, these guys need some more lawyers, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, my decision to apply to the CIA way back in the mid-70s came as a result of the Church Committee revelations and hearings, which I watched on television like many Americans. And you know, at that point, I knew I was in my, you know, mid to late 20s, knew nothing about the CIA, but it did occur to me that if CIA had lawyers, which I didn't really know at the time, but I also concluded that if they didn't, they were going to need some. And so it was a leap of faith on my part. I really knew no one in CIA. In those days, CIA, you know, public profile was virtually non-existent, so I mean, really, that's all it was. And, you know, the story continued for the next 34 years.
Well, and that story went from you taking a leap of faith and joining the CIA to playing a key role in some of the biggest controversies there. You've been getting attention since your book came out, Company Man. The idea that you were maybe the man who could have stopped the so-called enhanced interrogation techniques, including waterboarding, before they happened. How did you first hear about these methods?
It was in the early months of 2002, late March, first part of April 2002, which was, you know, just a few months after the 9/11 attacks. What had happened is that the CIA had captured its first really high-level big fish, so to speak, of the Al-Qaeda hierarchy, a man named Abu Zubaydah, this is an oversimplification, but he was basically the travel agent for Al-Qaeda and its terrorists. And he was captured. He was taken. He was the first resident, so to speak, of the CIA newly constructed the black site, constructed after 9/11. And the consensus of all of our intelligence experts was that if someone were to know in Al-Qaeda about the next attack coming against the homeland, and, you know, if you can go back in time, Rob, remember that everyone in the country assumed that it wasn't a question of if, but when the next attack would come, that this guy, Abu Zubaydah, would know about it. and shortly after being taken into custody, and he was shot up fairly significantly in the takedown. But after he recovered with the help of CIA doctors, he began to talk, but also made it quite clear to his interrogators, FBI and CIA interrogators, that there were things that he knew that the U.S. government wanted to know, and he simply was not going to tell us, and we couldn't make him. So it was decided that a new set of measures, extraordinary, unprecedented measures, needed to be considered to change the equation, so to speak, and try to get him to talk. I just know, there's a, you know, finally, that the context of the time is terribly important here, in that this was a few months after 9/11, and the pressure, the fact that time was deemed to be of the essence, was pervasive everywhere. So that's why the agency counterterrorism group came up with these proposed set of procedures, and they came to me as the chief legal advisor before going anywhere else to brief me on what they had in mind. None of which, by the way, all of which, by the way, was unprecedented to me. I had never heard of waterboarding in my 25 years prior to prior. CIA had never done anything close to what was being proposed. So. So it's true, and I, made clear in the book that I could have more or less stopped the whole idea before it started.
Well, waterboarding was one of a handful of things on the list. It ultimately became one of the most controversial things on the list. Do you think now that waterboarding is a form of torture?
No, no, at the time, mercifully, in my 25 years, I never had to become conversant with the torture statute, which is a law that's been on the books for a long time in the United States Code. I didn't know when I first heard these about what our people were contemplating. I honestly did not know where the legal line on the torture statute was, but certainly some of these procedures, particularly waterboarding, struck me as wherever the line was, this kind of thing was close to it. So, so that was the sort of the conundrum I faced. I was in uncharted waters legally, so to speak.
Well, one critic of waterboarding was John McCain, then senator, then presidential candidate. In the 2008 primaries, he made the case that after World War II, Japanese soldiers were charged with war crimes because of torture. On the lists of charges, waterboarding. Should we hold ourselves to a similar standard that was applied then?
Well, I don't dispute that we should vary from the existing history or practices, and certainly I and no one at CIA ever had any quarrel with Senator McCain's position on that. And Lord knows he had more of a right to take that position than anyone else, certainly more than I had had. But the fact of the matter was those practices, the euphemism waterboarding, over time, was far different than the sort of procedure that our people were contemplating. I don't want to gainsay the fact that waterboarding by any measure is an extremely aggressive technique, but the way CIA was to administer it and did administer it really was miles apart from anything the Japanese had done, or later the Khmer Rouge had done, under the rubric of waterboarding. So the program the agency posed and put into place was far different and far more regulated and controlled than any of the kinds of waterboarding that had occurred before.
We're talking to John Rizzo. He spent 34 years as a lawyer at the CIA, 7 of those years as the CIA's chief legal officer. His new book is Company Man, 30 Years of Controversy and Crisis in the CIA.
This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. We're back now with longtime CIA lawyer John Rizzo. His new book is Company Man, and we're talking about his career at the CIA and the controversies he dealt with there. John, just before the news, we were talking about enhanced interrogation techniques. Ultimately, you gave the green light, at least as it regarded your job, to waterboarding, sleep deprivation, other techniques. There was another that you didn't. I gather you can't specify it. But what led to one proposed technique not getting the okay?
Unfortunately, Rob, you know, as any CIA, former CIA employee, before writing anything, a book or an article, I was required to submit to the agency my manuscript for pre-publication review. And that particular technique, I was not able to delineate in detail. I did refer to it in the book as a technique so gruesome that we in the Justice Department ultimately decided to drop it from the list of proposed techniques. So I'm a bit constrained in that regard, but all I can tell you is that it was our expert deemed it to be one of the techniques that would be extremely helpful in getting Mr. Zubeda to talk. But honestly, both I and the Justice Department, who were considering these techniques, ultimately decided to pull it because it was even more aggressive and more brutal than even the waterboard.
And was it your thinking that that would have crossed the line and violated laws regarding torture, whereas these other techniques did not?
Well, I was ultimately deferring to the Department of Justice, which is the ultimate legal authority for all interpretation of all federal statutes. They had indicated to me that this particular technique may have crossed the line. They didn't come to a final decision, but we collectively decided, out of a sense of prudence, to just drop it.
Do you think we're ultimately safer for using the enhanced interrogation techniques, including waterboarding?
I do. Of course, I realize all the debate and controversy that has ensued over these many years now since the program was started and ultimately ended in the beginning of 2009. I do think they played a important role in the collection of otherwise unavailable intelligence in the particularly in the first few years after 9/11. Now, how big a role they played, and more specifically, whether the same information could have been obtained from Zubeda and the subsequent CIA detainees who were subjected to techniques, whether that would have happened without having to resort to these admittedly aggressive measures, I think that's ultimately unknowable. But again, if you permit me, just hark back to the fact that at the time this program was conceived and conducted, you know, time was considered by everyone in Washington and I think around the country to be of the essence. We all thought and feared and dreaded that another attack was imminent.
Do you have any, in hindsight, qualms or regrets about decisions that you or others around you made in these interrogation methods?
Well, Rob, I mean, I have given that a lot of thought in the years subsequent to that, to all of these events, and that's one of the things I wanted to lay out in the book. You know, in all honesty, I don't have any qualms. I mean, I just have to put myself back in time to 2002. From a 2014 perspective, there's not been mercifully another major attack in the homeland. Osama bin Laden has been found and eliminated. That's all, of course, all to the good and a blessed thing. But putting myself back into that period of time, into that period of crisis, I honestly, even now, knowing all that transpired in the years since, I honestly can't say that I could have and would have made a different decision. It was a very vexing and difficult decision, but I do not regret it.
You mentioned earlier the CIA black sites where people were interrogated, and you actually visited one a few years later, moving the story ahead a little bit. What were those black sites like?
Yes, well, I actually visited two. The description I give in the book is a composite. The CIA black site would change from year to year. It would be moved to different parts of the world. I visited two of them in roughly the 2004-2005 time period. Each of them, albeit in vastly different geographical locations, were primarily the same. I toured them, the best analogy I would make is that it was tantamount and conducted similar to what a U.S. federal prison facility, maximum security, would have been conducted, save for the fact, of course, that it was a secret facility in which no one outside of CIA would be permitted. But the facilities themselves were clean, well run. The cells were like, actually, according to specifically U.S. federal prison of U.S. federal prison standards.
You write that there's been a fundamental change in the way the U.S. pursues terrorists, from attempting to capture people and then interrogate them to killing them. Drone strikes, special operations attacks in the case of Osama bin Laden. What do you make of that change?
Well, that change was made by executive order by President Obama just literally 2 days after he took office. Now, recall that in the campaign of 2008, both candidates, John McCain and Barack Obama, had made it clear that they were going to eliminate the CIA prison system and rescind the enhanced interrogation program as soon as being elected. So it was, it was certainly no surprise to CIA when President Obama did that shortly after taking office. But, as everyone knows, what the Obama administration did do was not only continue but step up and double down significantly on the number of drone strikes directed against terrorists. And my own view is that it was fundamentally contingent on and related to the decision the Obama administration made was to eliminate the CIA secret prison program and its program in general to capture, detain, and aggressively interrogate terrorists. I think there's just a logical and undeniable nexus between those two policy decisions.
Before I let you go, in popular culture and I think popular conversation, there's a view that the CIA is always doing these secret things. They're kidnapping people or torturing them. These are just the things we happen to find out about. Do you, from reading your book, I assume you'll contest that popular notion of the CIA?
Yeah. Well, there are a lot of popular notions about CIA that that have grown over the years, based on spy novels and spy movies. As I indicated earlier, Rob, when 9/11 happened, I had been a lawyer at CIA for 25 years. Never before 9/11 had CIA ever built secret prisons, detained terrorists, subjected them to, admittedly harsh interrogation techniques. That was a new point of departure for the agency. It was a new point of departure, certainly for me. And I would suggest that the listeners should not generalize from those actions after 2011 and assume that CIA had always and will always do these sorts of things. That was an extraordinary, unprecedented period that I don't believe will ever be repeated.
John, thanks a lot for spending time with us today.
I appreciate your inviting me, Rob. Thank you.
That's John Rizzo, formerly with the CIA. His new book is called Company Man, 30 Years of Controversy and Crisis in the CIA.